from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, in our first half hour, we'll take up the landmark ruling yesterday, which changes net neutrality rules, striking down key parts of the FCC's internet rules requiring broadband providers to treat all internet traffic equally. Then at 10:30, we turn our attention to a Virginia court ruling that compels the online review site Yelp to identify users who post negative anonymous reviews if the services reviewed were not used and were defamatory. 2 half hours up ahead after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. On Tuesday, yesterday, a federal appeals court ruled that the FCC cannot continue to enforce net neutrality. That means Internet service providers, IPSs, are no longer required to treat traffic equally, stirring opponents' concerns that large, deep-pocketed providers like Verizon can slow or block certain web traffic. What will the ruling mean for Internet service providers, for content creators, and for consumers? Well, we brought Laura Seidel, who now has the venerable title Digital Cultural Correspondent for National Public Radio. I can say I knew her when, in to give us the skinny on this. Laura, good to have you here. Welcome.
It's nice to be here, Michael.
This has got to upset the Obama administration because they've been consistently behind what's called net neutrality. And actually, Tim Wu, who gave us that name, who used to appear on Forum, now at Columbia Law School, says takes the internet into totally uncharted territory. So lots of people aren't happy. I mean, obviously, Silicon Valley's unhappy.
Silicon Valley is not going to be happy about this decision at all. It has the potential to affect heavily two local companies, Netflix and Google, YouTube. The gist of this decision is that network neutrality, and for those of you out there who don't know what it is, I feel like we need to give a pretty clear definition because your eyes glaze over when you hear this term network neutrality. It sounds kind of wonky, but it can affect the price of your internet service. It can affect what you get over your internet service. For a company like Netflix, Netflix right now at peak hours, say about 30% of all internet traffic is Netflix at peak hours.
It's in North America.
That's in North America. Yeah. That's correct. And right now, Netflix essentially pays on one side for an internet connection. But that last mile to the home, to your house where the internet broadband providers have connected up lots of cables, Netflix doesn't pay extra for that. What many of the broadband providers have been saying they would like to do is charge Netflix for, say, a faster connection into your home. So if they charge Netflix, that, of course, could raise the price of Netflix. The other side of this, too, is, say, you know, Netflix now is a big company and it can afford to pay lots of money to get a faster connection. But if you're a startup and you want to compete against Netflix, and be the next YouTube or Netflix, you're going to have to pay an extra fee in order to compete. Because why would people go to watch something on a much slower network? This is basically what people are talking about and their concerns about why we need network neutrality.
You mentioned 32% of Netflix. I think Google's close to 20% of peak web traffic because of YouTube and other video sites. And so these are the two main ones that really come in the crossfires here. Yeah.
Right. They are. And at this point, I mean, and I think the cable companies are saying, look, these companies have a lot of money. Why should they get, you know, high-speed connections on our backs into your homes? We should be able to charge them extra.
But the way that usually works, it comes down and hits the consumer. That's why consumers are concerned, aren't they?
Well, yeah, exactly. Because in the end, you know, if you charge Netflix more, if Netflix has to pay, you know, millions, hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever it's going to cost them for that high-speed connection, they're going to pay it because they want to be in where the consumers are. But at some point, they're going to have to pass that price on to people. This is certainly going to be a major concern for these companies. But again, I think particularly for listeners in the Bay Area, the concern, too, is what about the next YouTube, right? So if you're, say, a venture capitalist or an investor or just a kid who wants to start a company, you've got a great idea and you want to be able to compete against those big companies. And remember, you know, when YouTube came along, there were other companies doing this. They won the battle. They had great technology. It was what people would say a fairly even playing field at the time.
I think it's safe to say this could mean all kinds of new things, new kinds of, well, federal rules, for example, where services and financing are concerned. In fact, some are calling it Internet 3.0.
Internet 3.0. I don't know if I would call it Internet 3.0. I should also say, you know, it isn't necessarily a done deal yet. We don't really know what
can be appealed if the FCC decides to appeal it. Although what I was struck by, and we were talking a little bit about this before we came on the air, is the FCC could have reclassified, or at least they could have tried to reclassify broadband as a telecom service, and but avoided doing it, so they say, because of strong Republican opposition. But that kind of made it easier for this legal decision.
Yeah. Now, so this is let's talk a little bit about this decision. It's a bit wonky, but some of it, I think, in terms of the politics of where we are is significant, and people probably would want to know about it. So the FCC could have classified broadband the way we classify telephone lines. Your telephone line is heavily regulated. It's called a common carrier. And that was done largely because telephone lines are essential to communication, or historically they had been, and the government said we had a special interest. So these are essentially, we're able to monitor what you do on your phone line. This makes it possible, for example, if you have an AT&T phone and you're talking to somebody on Verizon, the two networks talk together. That's part of the idea of how government regulation works. You don't have these two separate universes. The other thing is the phone company can't tell you what to say or who to talk to. Those lines remain pretty neutral. But the FCC decided not to impose that kind of regulation on broadband. Part of this was, I think, Republican opposition in Congress to any kind of regulation, and I think maybe some justifiable concern that this was a growth area, a new area of growth. We don't want to overregulate an industry. But this issue began to rear its head, and I should say it's something that the Obama administration, you mentioned earlier, ran on, was the idea of network neutrality. The FCC made an attempt to move it into this common carrier designation, and Congress flipped out. So they then tried at this juncture in time to use network neutrality in what I guess they call whatever broadband is at this moment. It's not a common carrier. It's an information service. And the court essentially said in this case, hey, listen, you guys, if you wanted to regulate broadband this heavily, you should have called it a common carrier, and you didn't. So you don't have the right to regulate it. So it's kind of a strange thing where the FCC got itself into this mess.
But under different leadership, Tom Wheeler's in charge now. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. It was Julius Genachowski, and there were many people who were critical of him because rather than take on the Republicans in Congress and say, no, we're going to do this, because the FCC actually does have the right, he backed down. And some people say he should have fought. Some people wonder if Tom Wheeler will fight. Hard to know. You know, Tom Wheeler is a different personality, but he was a venture capitalist and a lobbyist for the cable and the wireless industry. So it's hard to know where he will come down on this. But people do say he's somebody who's not afraid of a fight. Maybe he will try to change the classification. They could appeal this decision, although people don't think it's likely. They could try and come up with some other weird way of, you know, having rules around this. It's hard to say what they're going to do yet.
Talking to Laura Seidel, who is digital cultural correspondent for National Public Radio, here with us in studio. And this ruling could be it opens the way for, as you said, providers to actually change charge content companies for faster speed. But it could also be a boon to anti-piracy measures, couldn't it?
Well, yes, you're right. It could. And I suppose people in Hollywood might be perfectly happy about this, because if the Internet companies, if broadband companies, Comcast or Time Warner, have much more ability to basically control the traffic on their networks, they may do things that slow pirated websites. In fact, part of the reason we're here now is because Comcast did exactly that back in 2007. It's kind of a funny story. There was a gentleman who loved barbershop quartet music, and he would upload using BitTorrent software. And he noticed it started to slow down on BitTorrent and he couldn't upload the same way. And it turned out that Comcast was slowing down BitTorrent, which many people know has been a software that's been used for a lot of piracy. It was then the AP went and double checked it and they used the Bible to try and upload that in BitTorrent. And it was slowed down. So then the FCC cited Comcast and they lost the case. This was in 2007. They lost that case. Essentially, the court said, you know, you don't have any rules that say you can cite Comcast for this. Where are the rules? And that's how these rules that just got struck down were written.
Well, we should mention that this was a lawsuit that was brought by Verizon, and it allows broadband providers to actually block content or apps as they see fit. I mean, it has a lot of implications in terms of consequences, opens a way for providers to change content companies, as I said, for faster speed, but also perhaps make some websites inaccessible. Well, if you have questions or if you'd like to join this conversation about this decision, and it is somewhat momentous, made the front page of today's Chronicle, you can feel free to join us now. Our toll-free number is available, and we'd like to hear from you. The toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Again, we welcome your calls, and that's whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, feel free to call now. This is a half-hour segment, so if you'd like to give reaction to this ruling or if you have a question, as I said, it would be provident to call right now, 866-733-6786. You can also email us. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. The Institution for Public Accuracy, Laura, said that this ruling will make the web into something like cable TV.
That's one of the things people say. Now, I should give the broadband, the Comcasts and the Verizon side of this story. They say we would not do that because there would be so much noise on the internet, and it's not in our interest. We want to please you, the customer. That's their side of this argument. So they say we're not going to do it. And that, in fact, what this will enable us to do is to have more money to build out better networks, give you more services, the kind of thing they say they want to do. For example, say your elderly grandmother is too ill to go to a wedding. You could have a special high-speed internet connection that you pay for so that grandma can see the wedding in high fidelity as it goes on, and you pay extra maybe to have the special network that day. So they're saying what this will allow them to do is to give you lots of new and exciting services. There's also one other thing that's been brought up around this that might be worth mentioning that's less the economic side and more the free speech side, which is, you know, the Christian Coalition actually is a backer of network neutrality because they have concerns about grassroots groups being blocked or slowed in some way and not able to compete. And again, that makes you think about television and public broadcasting, where we sort of curate and make decisions about what political opinions we're going to put on. And the internet has been a place where you can really find anything. And so there is some concern that it could also have an impact on political speech as well.
Well, let's have some impact from our callers. In fact, let's go right to them. And we begin with a caller from Beaumont, Texas. Boris, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I would just like to point out that what we're finding in this situation is that you have a lot of users on the user end that are closet nerds, so to speak, that are being affected by this rule, and they all have the capability to vote on the issues, but yet no one is banding together in order to stop these big corporations from forming laws that basically prohibit any type of traffic that they don't see fit from coming or going from a household or a business or a startup program, and I think that's a real shame. I'm part of several organizations on the internet that are actively pursuing politics in this area, but the trouble is we just cannot get enough people to actively get up off their couch or from behind their World of Warcraft screen to look into these laws, and I think it's a big problem, and I don't really have an answer for it.
Some thoughts from you, Laura Seidel?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that because I actually think for a an issue with a really wonky title, network neutrality. There has been a lot of activism around it, at least from what I've seen. But you probably you're right. It hasn't been as big as, for example, the SOPA Act, the Stop Online Piracy Act, which failed in Congress because there was a huge outcry from people and concerns about censorship of the internet. And unfortunately, I think one of the ways that the cable companies talk about this and the broadband providers talk about this is we wouldn't do that. And one of the reasons we wouldn't do this, we wouldn't block things, is because there would be an outrage on the internet. This is a solution waiting for a problem. And so I guess the question is whether or not if this started happening, would you see the kind of outcry you're talking about?
Well, a lot depends on, I think,
editorial comment. Please, go
well,
for
no,
it.
I think inevitably usage is going to be based on billing for consumers or providers. And it depends on how hard the consumers are hit or how hard the providers are hit, doesn't it? It's the way things usually work politically.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, to some degree, if people are getting the service they want for a certain price, then they're happy. I think that is often the case. And in that sense, you know, the broadband providers are right. You know, if the consumers are happy, and when you're looking at federal policy, consumer policy, it ultimately is about what's best for consumers. So
let's go to more calls, and we welcome Chris. Good morning. You're on the air, Chris.
Yeah, good morning. This is Chris Whitteman. I was in Oakland last week when Tom Wheeler was in town, the FCC chairman, and I quoted to him his book, Net Effects, where he writes that our network revolution, i.e. the network, virtually defines all aspects of the current economy. And that's obviously true. Every time you use an ATM, every time you use a credit card, you're using essentially the phone system. But then I asked him, or I commented, that that network also carries all aspects of our social, cultural, and political life. And I asked him point blank, shouldn't that network be a common carrier? Mm-hmm. Of course, he dodged the question, but your guest might like to comment on that.
Well, you know, politicians like to dodge questions. And he probably, I'm curious what he said, but, you know, he may not have wanted to make a public statement yet. I don't know. You know, it's hard to know what to say at this point. The Republicans in Congress will make a lot of noise if he decides to try and turn broadband into a common carrier. And so he may just not be ready for the noise. That's, you know, it's hard to say when somebody doesn't say anything. That's why they don't say anything.
I think that's a fairly astute observation. Let me go to some more observations from listeners. Here's an email from Keith who says, why shouldn't the cable companies be able to guide the pricing on the infrastructure they have billions invested in? If Google at all doesn't like it, develop an alternative delivery mechanism to consumers, i.e. wireless, and leapfrog the cable companies. Another listener writes, what gets me is the IPSs enjoy virtual monopolies in most major markets in the United States. Here in my neighborhood, there's one choice for cable, Comcast, and one choice for DSL, AT&T. As a practical choice, I can only use cable because my work requires large uploads, so I'm stuck with the worst IPS in the world, Comcast. ISP.
ISP, yeah, yes.
I'm inverting. Reinvert those for best use there. Some questions for you. On Facebook, Jan writes, what does this mean to the average home user? It appears that if I go to a website and make a purchase, that there may be an added charge involved, which the website owner is charged by AT&T, for example, and which the website owner passes on to me in the way of a tax or slightly higher tax. Is this right?
Yeah, that absolutely could be the case. If, you know, again, I mean, using the example of Netflix, you know, if Netflix now has to pay extra money to get a high-speed connection into your home, they're going to pass it on to you. That, what is it, $7.99 now for, you know, all you can eat may go up. So, yeah.
Another listener writes, would it be possible for Netflix to offer incentives to subscribers to choose certain ISPs, i.e. charge subscribers who use, for example, Comcast more?
That would probably, well, you know, that's a tough question. I don't know. It's an interesting question whether or not Netflix would do something like that. On the one hand, just my gut as somebody who's watched these businesses is you don't want to do anything to discourage anybody from using your service. I mean, there's competition because Amazon Prime is, you know, chomping at your heels, Hulu. So why would you want to give people an excuse to go elsewhere? That would be my gut answer on that one.
And we'll get more questions for you or more comments. Carl, hi, you're on.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say I've actually been an executive in the technical side of a couple of carriers here and overseas. And the observation is the carriers are already getting paid for that tail circuit, the last mile circuit to the subscriber is paying for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they're not getting compensated for the use of that circuit. So the comment that they want to charge Netflix more, they're trying to double dip on that circuit.
Yeah, double dipping is a possibility, isn't it, Laura?
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think that's exactly what companies like Google, YouTube, Netflix would argue, and proponents of network neutrality, that when companies, you know, like Comcast or Time Warner are arguing like, you're getting a free ride on our pipes. In fact, they are paying to get on those pipes at one end. It's just the last mile, and you, the consumer, are paying for the last mile. And they would essentially say, yeah, we're going to charge you too, Netflix, for that. But the broadband companies have spent $1 trillion laying down these cables. And so they say we should have a right to manage our networks and recoup our investment.
Getting a lot of emails like this. This is a tweet, though, from Rick. He says, why not just change users based on internet usage? If users use more, these are torrent users, why not just charge users based on internet usage? If users use more bandwidth, they should pay more for it.
They already do, actually. I mean, you know, if you you can decide how much bandwidth speed you want and pay different prices. There already is tiered pricing. So I guess he may be referring to, will I charge you if you go past a certain part, which is what mobile does. And mind you, mobile is not subject to network neutrality.
Charged by
rules.
The bit.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Another listener tweets, how is this different than SOPA, the Stop Online Privacy Act?
Well, SOPA was very specifically targeted at being able to stop certain kinds of traffic, and specifically at piracy and making the broadband providers responsible for piracy. So it's not really the same thing. This is an overall look. It could be used to help cut back on piracy, but you know, it's not really the same. Same issue.
Quick question, because I want to get at what's next in your judgment. But Kieran writes, will the new ruling allow Verizon, AT&T to impose their own censorship? For example, if AT&T is providing home security services on its own, it may slow down home security alarms from its competitors.
Absolutely. That is, in fact, one of the issues. I mean, I should say this really quickly. Comcast made a deal it wouldn't do anything like this for 7 years when it got NBC, because the fear was that they would boost NBC products and slow down, for example, Netflix or competitors. So that's a very good point. Comcast isn't doing it because they couldn't have bought NBC if they hadn't agreed to not do it for 7 years.
So now we have to wait to see if the FCC will appeal, but there's going to be fighting from Silicon Valley. You
know? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it is rightly said that there is plenty of money here to fight this particular law, you know, so you have deep pockets on both sides, I think. The only thing is Silicon Valley has historically not been as good at lobbying as some of these companies, which have been around a lot longer and are used to playing the Washington game.
They certainly have the revenue to be good at lobbying or to hire the best lobbyists
sure.
That money can buy. But thank you so much, Laura, for being with us. Laura Seidel, again, is digital culture correspondent for National Public Radio. And this is not exactly dovetailing, but we're going to talk about the decision that went into a Virginia court about Yelp and anonymity on the web. There were reviews of a carpet company, and it turned out that those 7 reviews were not of customers of that carpet company. So can you be defamatory and not even a customer and still get protected by the First Amendment? When we return on Forum, I'm Michael Krasny.